only tell you this so you understand the difficulties of doing my job, and so you can empathize with me, is while I'm preparing for this interview with Bruce Woody, the executive director of ECUA, we're going to talk about very important things that matter to everybody's life. Meanwhile, I'm scrolling Facebook, and I come across a drawing of sort of a rodent, but drawn in a very square shape with two little legs and then a face at one corner and 2 feet at the other corners and then a tail. And the caption says, squirrel. And I'm supposed to just pretend I didn't see it. Go on with doing radio. Squirrel, whatever. 641 News Radio 92.3. Bruce Woody is the executive director of the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority, ECUA. He is on the line with us now after every meeting every month. Bruce, welcome back, sir. Sorry for that introduction.
Oh, no problem. That's the most interesting introduction I've ever had.
Wait, shade. Okay, so one of the things that you did yesterday is you gave the board an update on PFAS filtration, which wells have it, don't have it, and this is something you and I have talked about many times. Of course, a year ago, I guess, the EPA came out with their standard. The standard basically said, if you can detect it, you've got too much. The filtration standard should be to whatever is detectable, 3 parts per trillion, if I remember correctly. Anyway, tell me, and then where are we at in terms of the update that you gave yesterday?
Yeah, those new regulations are four parts per trillion. To put that in perspective, one part per trillion is one drop in 20 Olympic-sized swimming pools. That's how low that measurement is. It's almost non-detectable. ECUA currently maintains 30 wells. We have 28 of them that are actively in service, 2 that are out of service for various maintenance and other related reasons. 18 of those wells already have PFAS treatment on them. The ECUA board has seen this issue coming for years before it actually became a regulation. Has been adding PFAS, GAC, granular activated carbon filtration to its wells over an extended period of time. So we're way ahead of our peers in the industry as a result of that. At present, those 18 wells out of 28 already either have treatment or don't require treatment because they don't even have any detectable PFAS in them at all. That only leaves 10 remaining wells. 3 of those already have engineering design completed and are in the process of having those additional filters added. 2 of those 3 will be done this current calendar year, and the next one next spring. 4 wells then are currently in the planning phase and engineering, and then we'll have 3 others that already have GAC filters on them for iron removal. We'll add some additional filtration to them to make them adequate for also treating PFAS.
Okay, so we got 28 wells total. We have 18 that either already have the necessary filtration or do not need it. We have 3 that are in design, 4 that are in planning, this is of the remaining 10, and 3 others that already have a system of sorts, and we just have to adapt that system. I'm curious, out of the 18, how many of them don't show any PFAS, that don't need the filtration? How many of them have it and have the filtration?
Yeah, the breakdown on those 18, 2 of them have no detection at all of PFAS.
Yep.
3 of the wells do have detection, but they're still well below the newly established MCL limits that were put out by the EPA. 13 of them already have PFAS removal or granular activated carbon treatments in
Got
place.
It. Oh, so what I said was false. I thought you could only, like, the lowest detectable level was the standard that you couldn't cross that threshold. You're telling me that we have 3 wells we can detect lower than 4 parts per trillion, but because it's below that, we don't have to filter. Is that right?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, okay.
They vary back and forth. They'll either be no detect or maybe they'll come up with 1 or something, but they're below the 4.
Okay. Well, I appreciate the correction. I always would rather get it right. So one last question on PFAS, Bruce, because as I understand it, even though ECUA has been ahead and planning ahead and is in a pretty good place compared to a lot of water systems, the one thing that has always concerned me about this, and I know has also concerned you, is the cost, not just for installing the capability of filtering, but then the cost of actually having the filters, how frequently they have to be replaced, and the disposal of those filters, which the general concern had been that now that everybody's going to have to start doing this, the demand for the granular activated carbon filters and then the disposal of them would both be more and more and more expensive as more and more demand is put on that those capabilities. How close are we to where we need to be budget-wise in order for paying for this? Are we going to have to start raising rates in order to accommodate the increases in cost for some of these things? Like, where are we at financially on solving this problem?
Yeah, that's a very good question. There's two components to it. There's the capital cost of installing additional granular activated carbon filtration, and then there's the operational cost once they're actually in place.
Mm-hmm.
We're well ahead on the capital because all the ones we already have installed. Plus, we do have some very important settlement funds coming from our lawsuits against 3M and Tyco and BASF. We're estimating that will probably cover 80, maybe even 85% of our those settlement funds will cover that much of our capital cost of providing all the filtration at one-time upfront cost, which is wonderful. Again, largely because we were quite a ways ahead when this whole thing came down. But going forward, the real cost that continues for operations is the replacement of that. Filters have to be changed. The media inside those filters have to be changed. What we used to spend probably $800,000 to $1 million a year on that because we're adding so many more filters and these limits are so low that the carbon has to be changed more frequently than they have been in the past. We'll probably be spending closer to $6 million a year changing filters.
And that's just the filter side. That's not the disposal side, or is that both?
That is both.
Okay.
Is both.
Wow. $6 million a year,
and how frequently we have to change them. That each well varies, but depending on how much water is pumped through a given well site. We certainly emphasize the production of at wells that have lower PFAS concentrations in them.
Yeah,
just to help make sure the filters last as long as they can.
Yeah, I mean, it makes sense. If you're putting more water and/or it has a higher concentration of PFAS in the pre-treated water, then obviously those filters are not going to last as long. As a layman, that makes sense to me. So, total curiosity, because I don't know. I'm always trying to learn. Like, how long do these filters last? Are we talking, like, 5 years, a month? Like, I just have no idea. I know on my refrigerator, it's every couple of months, right? So,
right. Right. Again, varies by well and concentration and,
sure,
and volume. So, the range probably runs from 2 years to 6 years, probably in that ballpark.
Okay.
There are a few that we may have to do a little more frequently than that.
Okay. All right. Well, that's helpful. Go ahead.
And the cost of replacing those vary depending whether they can be reconstituted or whether we have to take them to an arid landfill clear out in Idaho.
Yeah. I'm trying to get my brain wrapped around the idea that we used to spend $1 million a year on filters, and now we're going to be spending $6 million a year on filters. That's just amazing. I know fluoride kind of came up. I think you guys are kind of in a waiting pattern because you want to see what's going to happen at the state level in Tallahassee with the proposed bill to ban fluoride. One of the Senate bills, 700, I think, or something like that. Is that kind of where we're at right now?
Yes. As far as local voices, we've had two or three folks who have been frequent attenders and voicing concerns, but it's just been the same two or three folks, certainly a minority. The board, however, is very sensitive even to the minority, but is more concerned about what the majority opinion is of our community. Right now, we've talked about probably sending it back as a referendum to the voters at the next general election, but that's well over a year away. Meanwhile, the state legislature is reviewing the Farm Bill, Senate Bill 700, that among many other things within the bill, there is a two or three paragraph section that would address fluoride and prevent its use in the state of Florida if it's approved.
And so, we've only got about a month left in session. Let's wait and see what the legislature does, because if they ban it, then there's not much else for us to have to do as far as making a decision. And if they don't ban it, well, then we can, do whatever we're going to do. That makes sense. Just last quick thing. I think you told the board to talk with them about one of the force main replacements, and also about a lift station replacement. Is that right?
Yeah, for the folks in the Bayou Grande area, who this is a subdivision that's south of Gulf Beach Highway in the area around San Marcos Camino. They have an existing lift station there that's in a vulnerable location. It's in the pavement. It's hard to access. It's so close to Bayou Grande. It's also subject to flooding during extreme weather. So we approved a resolution to replace that, raise it, relocate it out of the roadway into a side lot that we've purchased, and to raise its elevation and provide protections. Also give an update on a ongoing force main replacement program. We have a 16-inch force main in the northeast area, near Scenic Highway, south of Olive, down to just south of I-10. We've got a four-phase replacement program that's getting ready to finish the fourth phase. I'll give them an update on the status of that project.
Okay, very good. And force main, again, just to make sure everybody understands, force main is sewage rather than water. I just, you know, sometimes the terms not everybody knows, right?
Sure, sure. That's an important point. We have 400 lift stations around our community, and most of those will pump from one location to another. Force main, in this case, is a discharge from a lift station for wastewater, and we pump it from a lower elevation to a higher elevation on its way to the wastewater treatment plant.
And always in the interest of just making sure anybody who's listening and maybe has never thought about these subjects before at all, wastewater, or what I'm calling sewer water, that's what came out of your, what goes into and comes out of your toilet. drinking water, potable water, is what comes into and goes out of your faucet, because you treat both ends, so to speak. Bruce Woody, he is the executive director of the Emerald Coast Utilities Authority. Bruce, as always, you guys do an incredibly important job, and we didn't even talk about things like recycling and, you know, solid waste, garbage disposal, but I know we always talk about that stuff as well. Thank you for keeping our drinking water safe and treating our sewer water, and for helping us understand what's going on with our local government and the costs they're facing. I appreciate it, sir.
Yeah, I appreciate those comments. So we take our jobs for protecting the public health very seriously, and always appreciate these opportunities to share information with our customers.
And my all-time favorite slogan I saw on the side of a truck, you know, I think it might have been locally, but, you know, for us, number two is number one. Bruce, thanks so much. Thank you so much for the update.